moderating their act. Well, it's a pretty day. We have a beautiful weekend. I'm sure Dad will enjoy. Hurry back, Barbara. No concern, that's good. Yes, and that's you, thank you.
But this year you're going to see more of me. My joy is that I'm going to start a teen group, and hopefully teens that are not here today, that if anybody the word would get out, so that, and we're maybe going to have some visitors from Reed and our society too, in order to make, you know, big enough group. If you know of any of those folks, we'd like to spread the word and welcome you today.
Thank you. Let's reverse that.
all that I have met was a part of me. It was my good fortune, and an unappreciated one, to be born into a loving family in which both parents were active in a church which was only 2 blocks away. My father was on the finance committee, my mother sang in the choir, sometimes taught Sunday school, played the piano for innumerable occasions, and school was practiced with her in our home, so I heard a lot of religious music. And on the piano in our house, always next to the Methodist temple, was another dark red book, famous hymns with stories and pictures. And my mother, when she had a few minutes waiting for something to cook, or for some other reason had a little spare time, would sit down and play something. Not always again, but quite often again. Bobby sang on Sunday mornings, Savior like a shepherd we need us. Still, the word Savior, to me, didn't mean being saved. And in our church, I don't remember that saving from hell or from a Calvinist fate was ever mentioned. The emphasis instead was on kindness, on forgiving others, on helping people. And yes, Rick?
Could we introduce the children, Father? Or are you getting to the point where...
Oh, I have forgotten the children's story. But it's wrapped up in another story. Thank you, Rick. This is how we help each other. If children want to come up, it's fine. And I would explain that in the little village, there was not a fire department as we know it in Madison. There were fire engines, and there was a siren, but there was no fire department. Instead, if there was a fire somewhere, the siren was sounded, and everybody and the people who had promised to help would rush to the fire station and get on the fire truck and go to the fire. That's just an explanation. To you grown-ups, I would say, I was teaching a class in Sunday school to the children of our fellowship. There were 5 little boys, about 8 years old, I think. We were down in the valley behind our house, where a campfire spot had pieces of logs. We didn't have a fire that morning. But we sat on the logs in a little circle, and it was a beautiful May morning. The sun was shining, and near us we could see a man raking his backyard. The birds were flying around, and little white violets were coming out under the currant bushes. We were down low in the valley. So the story I was telling him was about an old man in India who sent his son off to get schooling, to get educated. And when the son came back after quite a long time, I suppose this would be like going to college. The father was happy to see his son again, but he thought that son was kind of conceited, kind of stuck up. He thought he knew everything by that time. And the father thought, how can I teach my son that he doesn't know everything? So they would take walks, and the father would talk to the boy. And one day, the father took along, in India, a lot of their dishes are made of brass. He took along a long brass dish, and in his pocket of his robe, he took along with salt. And when they sat down after a while, the son said, Father, why did you bring that pan with you? And the boy said, and the father said, Son, I want you to fill that pan with water and bring it back to me. The boy did so. Well, here's a lump of salt, put it in the water. And the boy did that. And there were a few minutes, and then the father said, Now give the salt back to me. I can't do that, Father. There is no lump of salt there now. The father said, Taste the water at this end. It's salty, Father. Now taste it at this end. It's only there also. And in the middle? It's salty there too. The father said, Even though your eyes don't help you to see the salt, yet with your tongue you can taste the salt. And you found that what was before just a small lump of salt is now on this side of the pan of water and now on this side, and in the middle. It's everywhere in the water. Now, Svetaka, my son, you should know also that although your eyes don't help you to see God, yet there are many other ways you may use to find out whether or not God is. God, like the salt, is everywhere. Here, there, and far off. And as the salt is hidden in the water, so is God hidden in all the world. The Spirit, as you yourself are the Spirit. God is hidden in you, my son. God is you, and you are part of God. Svetaka was quiet a long time then. He was saying to himself over and over again what his father had said. God is everywhere, here and there and far off. As the salt is hidden in the water, so God is hidden in all the world. God is spirit, but you yourself are spirit. God is you, hidden in you, and you are part of God. Finally, Svetaka said, Father, help me to understand even more. It shall be so, my son, said the father. There's much more to learn. And I told this story to the five boys sitting around the campfire circle. And then I said to them, where do you see signs of God in your world? Oh, they said, right away, in the flowers coming up. They could see no violets under the bushes. In the ferns that were unfolding their fiddleheads on this May morning. In the sunshine, and they mentioned the birds, and when we rolled those log pieces, they'd seen the bugs getting lively for a new season of summer. Yes. And besides the world of nature, where else do you see God? And at that very minute, the fire siren sounded very loud, and immediately, up above our heads in the house in the yard next to my house. Whoop, wham, that was the back door. Whoop, wham, that was the car door. Mm. And the car roared away. And the man who'd been raking his yard in our sight was on a dead run for his garage. Whoop, 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 and his car roared away. The little boys just looked at him. Oh, Mrs. Raines. They could see that God was in those men who were running to help other people whom they didn't even know because the house was on fire. That's the end of my story. The end of my story. December, but that's a small sample of how the other half lives. holidays deepened my enjoyment of the outdoors. We lived in a lovely neighborhood with a lake close by, but the teachers in school also used poems to celebrate the glories of nature. The September one poem, that's where I first heard of blue gentians. I don't remember, but what I do remember is ye suns and skies and clouds of June and flowers of June together, you cannot rival for 1 hour October's bright blue weather. Mm-hmm. That's what we got this morning, isn't it? Even though it's September, bright blue weather. And our parents commented on nature as we passed through beautiful scenery. The moon path on the lake. We would ask Dad to drive that way on our way home if it were evening and the moon was out, so that we could see that shining silver path. There were sunrises and sunsets. Love for one's fellow human beings was the thrust of the Christianity taught in our church. You've heard of the little girl who said she liked a poem, I want to live in a house by the side of the road and be friendly with men. The real one, of course, is, and be a friend to men. Which cost 15 cents at the dime store. And you can see it's well used. The pages are yellow and disintegrating at the borders, but it's full. It's been full for many years, and many things are copied into it. The song which Kay is going to sing for you later is in this. It was probably about that time, about age 12 or 13, that I first heard Edna St. Vincent Millay's poem and loved it. The big poem is called Renaissance, but the few lines that are probably familiar to you: "Oh God," I cried, "no dark disguise can e'er hereafter hide from me thy radiant identity. I know the path that tells thy way through the cool eve of every day." Oh, I've left out some. Can I begin again? "Oh God," I cried, "no dark disguise can e'er hereafter hide from me thy radiant identity. Thou canst not move across the grass, but my quick eyes will see thee pass, nor speak, however silently, but my hushed voice will answer thee. I know the path that tells thy way through the cool eve of every day. God, I can push the grass apart and lay my finger on thy heart." As an adolescent, I thought that was great poetry and then St. Vincent Millay. But there were other ideas about God that shaped my beliefs. At age 12, almost 13, there was a boy who telephoned me nearly every night and who paid attention to me at school. But eighth grade was almost over, and I was to go to a certain junior high school for ninth, while he lived at the edge of our school's district, so he could go to another school, what was called one of the silk stocking schools of more affluent families. His parents could choose. So I prayed. Surely God must know I was a good girl and done anything really awfully wrong. But fall came, and Roderick went to the other school. It was a terrible disappointment. Years later, when I began to read Somerset Maugham's novel Of Human Bondage, there is a character in that, a little boy with a club foot, who has prayed that his club foot would be normal. He's such a good boy, and he's prayed so earnestly, he's sure that on Easter morning when he wakes up, that club foot will be like other people's feet. And of course, it didn't happen. When I reached that part of the book, I closed the book and never opened it again. I knew how he felt. And when I heard a minister preach that God always answers prayer, and sometimes the answer is no, the book that I enjoyed at about that time was Edgar B. Masters' Spoon River Anthology, probably familiar to you. It's a book of gravestones from a mythical Midwestern town, And each gravestone tells the story of a certain individual who had lived in that town. This is Mrs. George Reese. To this generation, I would say, memorize each day some bit of verse of truth or beauty. It may serve a turn in your life. My husband had nothing to do with the fall of the bank. He was only cashier. The wreck was due to the president, Thomas Rhodes, and his vain, unscrupulous son. But my husband was sent to prison, and I was left with the children to feed and clothe and send them to school. And I did it, and sent them forth into the world all clean and strong, and all through the wisdom of Pope, the poet. Act well your part, there all the honor lies. Mm-hmm. Act well your part, there all the honor lies. You can see how that shaped the value system of an adolescent. A new minister came when I was 13 years old. He was only 27, and he and his charming, attractive, loving wife revolutionized the church, invigorated every aspect of it, especially the young people's organization. No one had to make us go to church then, and I was active in the young people's group. We went to summer camp for a week with him. At Christmas time, he preached once. He talked to us about how in the Bible, all those books of the Bible were written in a language other than English. Each one of the books had to be translated by someone, and the meaning of the translation sometimes is not quite what the original writer intended. He read to us from the book of John, the Gospel of John, which you may remember is not a narrative. It doesn't mention Bethlehem, nor shepherds, nor wise men, nor a manger, nor the baby. Instead, it begins, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God." And then there are about 10 more verses. "He came to his own home, and his own people received him not." And then verse 14 says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth." Then the minister said to us, "Word," it's capitalized in the Bible, "could mean concept, could mean idea." Think about that quotation with the word idea. In the beginning was the idea, and the idea was with God, and the idea was God. "And the idea became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth." That was a powerful thing for me also. Then later I heard a minister say, if there had never been a Jesus, if he'd never lived, we would have had to invent him to personify our values, to be the epitome of the ideals we hold to be true and right. The same minister took us as a youth group one night over to St. Paul to Hamline University, where the president of Hamline spoke to us a poem which also moved me deeply. "Who thou art I know not, but this much I know, thou hast set the Pleiades in a silver robe. Thou hast set the trackless winds loose upon their way, thou hast reared a colored wall twixt the night and day. Thou hast made the flowers to bloom and the stars to shine, hid rare gems of richest ore in the tunneled mine. But chief of all thy wondrous works, supreme of all thy plan, thou hast put an upward reach into the heart of man." An upward reach. I had a professor first hour of my freshman year, a philosophy professor, a woman. One morning, before the class even began, she said, "Last night in Northrop Auditorium, I heard Marian Anderson sing a concert. And the applause was so great that she has agreed to sing again this afternoon at 3:30 in the auditorium, and the admission will be only 25 cents. Does anyone want to borrow a quarter?" I had a quarter that day. Well, words failing. It was marvelous, especially the song, "They crucified my Lord, and he never said a mumbling word. They crucified my Lord, and he never said a mumbling word. Not a word. Not a word. Not a word." And her beautiful voice, which had such a range, went way down. Not a word. It was a powerful lesson in an uncomplaining lifestyle. Each Wednesday afternoon, I went to a settlement house to teach knitting to a group of preteen girls, and when summer came after that freshman year, I was a camp counselor at another settlement house camp. And there, our camp director, who had a bunch of novices for counselors, began our first evening session together of counselor training before the children came by lighting a fire in the fireplace. She was on her knees, and as she lit the fire, she repeated John Oxenham's poem, "The Sacrament of the Fire." Kneel always when you light a fire. Kneel reverently and thankful be for God's unfailing charity. And on the ascending flame, inspire a little prayer that may upbear the incense of your thankfulness for this sweet grace of warmth and light. For here again is sacrifice for your delight. After 2 years with that camp director, I went on to the camp out east, and there another poem, which I won't try to sing for you, but you will perhaps recognize the first line. I've never heard it before. Walt Whitman's, "There was a child went forth every day, and the first thing he looked upon, that thing he became." You know me already so well that you know that resonated with me that year, and I hope you'll come back to that later in my ministry. Then I want to interject one brief incident, a negative one, from a year of graduate school in Cleveland. On a fall Sunday morning, I attended a Methodist church, and after the service, people shook hands with me and said, "We're glad you came today." But my most outstanding memory of that is how each person's eyes looked over my shoulder as they shook my hand to see who they could pass me to next, so they wouldn't have to carry on the conversation. Prairie society is not like that, and I trust it never will be. We do get to know one another better in our after-service coffee hour. You stay. The years of World War II were spent in Boston, in yet another settlement house, right across the street from a Unitarian church. I went once. Dull. Not speaking to anything that related to me. Instead, I went to a congregational church every Sunday. And there, standing in the balcony, now World War II was going on. And I had been rolling bandages with mothers during the week at the church building. And I looked down from the balcony and I could see some of those same women. And the congregation was singing, "Eternal Father, strong to save, whose arm hath bound the restless wave, who bids the mighty ocean deep its own appointed limits keep. Oh, hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea." I looked down at one mother whom I knew had lost a son already. And yet I sang that. I didn't really believe it, but as the words of another poem say, hoping it might be so. And the next little vignette I want to share with you took place after marriage, and I moved back home to my home state of Minnesota, where my husband was an intern at the University Hospital. We went to a weekend at Frontenac on the Mississippi River, a retreat camp for young. The weekend was for young couples. And there, one of the evening speakers was a rotund, jolly man whom I never saw again, but his punchline was unforgettable. After opening paragraphs of cordiality and humor, but earnestness and a message, he reached into the back side of the lectern and pulled out an extension cord. "You know what this is," he said. "It can make possible all kinds of wonderful things. It can clean your house, light a room, make a coffee, run the slide projector, all kinds of things, but only if it's plugged in. I want you to be plugged in, he said to us, to the great source of power. Of course, the reason I include that memory today to you is because I want you to be plugged in to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. That's where you can find reinvigoration for the coming week. We minister to one another here and to people in our larger community, too. This might be a good time to read together our bond of union. Let's open our hymnals. Him in spirit and in truth. Then our little family of five moved to a small village in upstate New York, so conservative that every Protestant church used the Apostles' Creed on Sunday morning. I took the children to a Presbyterian Sunday school because our Methodist church in Minnesota had been using Presbyterian materials, which are very good. And there we joined the Unitarian Fellowship in the first year we lived there. As it turned out, I was the only one in the whole 25 that had ever taught Sunday school before. So you can imagine, I was doing the job of planning and conducting Sunday morning meetings for the children, if I wanted the boys to have to learn what I was learning. And learn I did. I was utterly unfamiliar with what Unitarianism meant. And this was before the two denominations joined. A quotation that's come back to me many times is this: when any program of enrichment is planned, it's the one who does the planning that gets the enrichment. Here it comes. Teach Sunday school, you'll learn a lot. It was very true. I read A. Paul Davies' The Meaning of the Dead Sea Scrolls. I read Schweitzer's Out of My Life and Thought. Sophia Lyon Faw's The Questioning Child and Religion. What's the other classic by Mrs. Faw's? Today's Child and Yesterday's Heritage. Some of these are downstairs in our library and you can borrow. It was Dr. Schweitzer who explained that the reason no one wrote down anything that Jesus said while he was alive, it was, I think, 80 years after he died, before anyone wrote down any of those quotations. It was because at that time, there was an eschatological theory prevalent that the world was going to end within the lifetime of people living at Jesus' time. They didn't need to write anything down. They were going to either go to heaven or hell immediately anyway. It wasn't hard for me to abandon the idea of the Trinity, for I had never understood that anyway. My readings in history corroborated the concept that man created God in his own image, not the reverse. And it was easy to believe, as I recall, Old Testament sayings about, I, thy God, am a jealous God. That's actually in the Bible. And sing praises to the Lord, all that sort of stuff, commanding you. I can't believe God has ears. The idea of human sacrifice seemed to me to belong to very primitive religion. It wasn't hard for me to realize that any God worthy of the name God would not condemn a human to death on the cross to atone for the sins of people who hadn't yet been born. So the transition to Unitarianism was not difficult for me, though in working with the children, I needed visual aids. The flaming chalice had not yet been introduced into our worship services. I needed some center of attention from the children. Worship, said one of the helps for teachers, is worth-ship, the consideration of things of worth. And that resonated well with my mind, the beauties of nature, considering that. The magnificent personalities in human beings, yes. The wisdom of the past, yes. Consideration of things of worth is worship. There was a lovely book called How Miracles Abound, and that opened my eyes to marvels all around me. I had not thought about those things before. An elderly gentleman who was a photographer showed the children a camera and talked to them about the human eye, the miracles of the human eye, explaining it in terms of what the camera could do, the aperture for light, for instance. And when we studied the human hand in How Miracles Abound, marvelous. I think one of the most helpful ideas that I gained from Unitarian Universalist religion is the acceptance of mystery, of wonder. We can live with uncertainty. We can live with not knowing for sure everything. The lovely hymn to an old Welsh tune says it well: immortal, invisible. When Christians preach God is love, I can think we experience that love through other people. The beauty of character of some people and the splendors of the natural world are gifts of God. But if we acknowledge that, we have to acknowledge also the bad things. As the little rhyme that Dave Johnson gave me, it's really the first of many verses of a long song of the American Association of Adult Atheists. Praise God from whom all cyclones blow. Praise Him whom when rivers overflow. Praise Him who blows down church and steeple. Sinks boats and ships and drowns the people. The first he said was about 20 verses ago. A serious sermon with that fun was called A Name for Reality. Doesn't say God, but it's a name for reality. I have not the temerity to try to make a synopsis of that. A window behind the pulpit. These are symbols of the world's religions, and we might talk about that some other day. That isn't my purpose in showing you the slide, but more to have you feel with me the reverence I felt when I walked in. But it's the sermon of that day that I want to synopsize for you a minute. Mr. Ellsworth Freeman was the minister, and he had drawn heavily on a book by Viktor Frankl, which I put into the literature rack too. In the rack, it's called Man's Search for Meaning. Dr. Frankl had been a psychiatrist in Germany and was in a prison camp for more than 3 years with people who lost everything in life. Their family, their friends, their possessions, some with even their teeth drilled for the gold that was in them. Even their hope of escape was gone, but one last freedom was left to them. The freedom to choose the attitude with which they would accept those misfortunes. The freedom to choose the attitude with which they would accept their fate. I put a poem, which I don't want you to read now, but if you should take this home, it ends about troubled seasons. There were many days of troubled seasons then. A divorce, a shutout from graduate school for what I felt were unjust reasons, a teenage son who quit school and went off across the country with no word to us for many, many months. But one bright spot, hearing that he might be in Boston, I asked Universalist Minister John Cummins if there was a place in Boston he knew of where there was a bulletin board, because I'd heard how many runaways get to Boston. And John Cummins told me that the Arlington Street Church, which faces Boston Common, had a coffee house in its basement because of the number of runaway youth. So I sent a card asking my son to call home, no emergency. And he called me within 5 days. I said, did you see the card in the Arlington Street Church? Where do you think I am right now? He said. Wasn't this a situation of God's love coming to me through people who founded that coffee house, who told me about it? In 1983, I saw an item in the UU World, that was our denomination's newspaper then, that said, will you let yourself be railroaded by the Edmonton Church? Come to Edmonton, and for $91 Canadian funds, we will give you bed and breakfast with a UU family, and then with others from all across the land, you will travel through the most magnificent mountain scenery in the North American continent, and we'll get you to Vancouver in time for General Assembly. I drove along through North Dakota, Montana, Saskatchewan, and it all came true. 90 people made the trip. The whole train was run through a car wash before it left the station in Calgary, so that the windows and the long glass dome of the dome car would all be clean for us to look out at the awesome splendor
Then the GA week itself, a widening of sympathies, a better understanding of other people's viewpoints. I could profit from even sessions I didn't attend when I saw their titles. For instance, one on the ministry called On Being Human for a Living. It's a good title for what it means to be a minister, being human for a living. And another title that I didn't attend, To Be a Part of the Cambium. Cambium, I knew that word. It's that thin, moist layer of a tree's growing cells just inside the bark. When you peel one, you come to that slippery layer. Outside the heartwood that has been there for years. Sometimes we see a large tree cut down or fallen, and we view that at the bottom, inside, it's empty, rotted away. How could that be? But the cambium was there all along, still drawing moisture and nutrients from the soil and sending it up to the branches, and still sending that magic that chlorophyll makes down from the leaves to help the roots grow. It's a two-way channel, a two-way highway, and it's also the place where growth is going on in a tree. It's just inside the cambium that those rings are formed. Later, there was a wonderful summer in Alaska, working at a hotel in Denali National Park. And the words of a Christian hymn came to me many times. When through the woods and forest glades I wander and hear the birds sing sweetly in the trees, when I look down from lofty mountains, grandeur, and hear the brook and feel the gentle breeze, then sings my heart, eternal God, to thee, how great thou art. A strong belief in the ripple effect of each individual's actions and words is part of my religious conviction, too. You've heard that from me before. In Menominee, Wisconsin, if you went there, there's a big dark red stone building at the center of town. And it belongs to the town. It houses meeting rooms, a theater, what was a public library, a room below with a kitchen for serving dinners, and a Unitarian minister's study. In the 1890s, the minister, whose last name was Doty, served both Menominee and Eau Claire, traveling by train, before the days of automobiles, to go and preach in both towns each Sunday and return on Monday to his home. And he suggested to the father of a young, beautiful girl who died at age 18. The father was a lumber baron and deeply grieved by his daughter's death. And Mr. Doty suggested a memorial to the daughter might be a civic building for the town. So if you go to Menominee, the Mabel Tainter Memorial Building is that monument, all because of the ripple effect of Mr. Doty's words. Then in a recent year, I went to Kentucky for an elder hostel. I couldn't get there for the Sunday afternoon by driving on Sunday morning, so I went on Saturday thinking I'll stay in Louisville overnight and go on to Otter Creek, go to church in UU Church in Louisville on Sunday morning and go to Otter Creek in the afternoon. So on a Saturday evening, a beautiful sunny summer evening, I drove into Louisville and found a phone booth and looked in the book and found the three addresses of Unitarian churches and discovered I was very close to First Unitarian. So I got in the car and drove, and here was, this is old Louisville, First Methodist, First Baptist, First Presbyterian, massive old buildings. And then ahead of me on the right, I saw the skeleton of a steeple, not the whole steeple, but silvery bones that formed a steeple, and it looked a little bit off-center. I wasn't sure whether that was an arrow on top. I didn't know. I was supposed to be driving a car when we're downtown in a strange city, so I didn't look too closely. When I drew up beside it, that was it all right. But there was a terrific black line in the stones of the church. It was at different heights. This church had been burned. The windows, which probably had held stained glass, you know, the windows that are shaped like this, three in a row, now had clear glass with an etched abstract design. And the black line went all around the main corner parts of the church. And in that, a big deck, now concreted over, showed where evidently the building at one time had gone to be even larger than it was at the present. So I drove around to the back and parked the car because I could see it. movement behind the glass doors. On a Saturday night, I walked up to those doors, and a young man opened. And I said, "I'm a Unitarian from Wisconsin. Do you want to look around?" He said, "We're waiting for our high schoolers for a sleepover, so we've nothing to do right now." "Oh, yes," I said, and he took me in. We went first to that main room. The black line was visible at different heights, all around two sides of the room. On a third side, the organ pipes looked like plumbing sticking out from the wall, not the beautiful golden pencils that hide it in any church, but plumbing pipes. And the organist's keyboard and his seat were cantilevered out from the wall on that side. The whole floor was gray concrete, and the chairs were rush-seated wooden chairs. In other words, money had been slim, though insurance had helped. "What a sermon in stone," I said to the young man. "I don't remember reading about this in the UU World." "Oh, yes, it was in," he said. And I said, "The architect certainly deserves honors for this idea of building up from what was burned." "Oh, he got lots of awards for this," the young man said. And then we toured other parts of the church. I won't go into all that. But at the end, we came to the office area, which was really a counter around the office machines. And next to it, a pillar. And on that pillar, a picture about this size of the church as it looked on the night of the fire, the morning after the fire. The slide that I have is not perfect. The sketch was of charcoal. Once more, Vicki. The sketch was much more graphic. I looked to the congregation for a picture, and this is evidently a sculpture someone made to memorialize a person who died. But the real sketch was worse yet. And underneath the sketch on that wall was a quotation in a print which I recognized as part of Wayside Pulpit. Wayside Pulpit is a service of the UU Way. If a church subscribes to it, a quotation is sent each month to that church for putting in a glass case outside the church building so that passersby can know what we're about, what sort of things we believe in. And the words in this Wayside Pulpit print were, "The place that seems like the end may also be only the beginning." Before I left my home, I had wanted to write some word of support to a man I knew from the Universalist Church in Minneapolis, a man who was facing a painful divorce while in his 40s. And yet I didn't know what to say, but now I had something to say. I told him about my visit to the Louisville Church. "The place that seems like the end may also be only the beginning." 3 weeks later, I was pouring coffee at First Unitarian Church. This is before I made my decision to join Prairie. And a couple came up to the coffee urn and said, "We're Unitarians from North Carolina," the woman said. "And we're going to an elder hospital this afternoon in Wisconsin. We thought we'd look you over this morning." I said, "I did that just 3 weeks ago in Louisville, Kentucky." "Louisville," she said. And she grabbed my arm. She said, "Did you go to First Church? That was our church. We were members there when it burned." And I told her how impressed I had been. It was a really religious experience for me. Especially that quotation, "The place that looks like, that seems like the end may also be only the beginning." And this woman said, "Would you believe that's the quotation that was in the case outside the church the night of the fire?" You've been patient. What has Prairie Society contributed to my religious growth? Oh, much. And I won't go into all the details. Most recently, when Sam Lynn talked to us, comparing American culture with ethical principles of Confucianism, really, was what he was talking about. It's worth our consideration at another time. That was very helpful. And when Julie Stowe talked to us about unplugging the Christmas machine, she must have drawn us to summarize what remained to us when we stripped away all the unnecessaries of Christmas celebration. Anyway, I had a green crayon that morning, And the response to me as to what was evergreen has been a good reminder. Whoops, here we are. Evergreen, an ideal image of self. This is what I pray about. I want to be evergreen hope, evergreen thankfulness, evergreen memories, evergreen confidence in others, evergreen growth in self-understanding, evergreen joy of seeing and hearing all children, and the ripple effect of noble actions and words of inspiration. Then I put on a trunk on the tree, which would be my summary. God is a spirit without gender, neither male nor female. God is in me, all around me, and in others. There is one God. All religious beliefs are just opinions about that God. I can live with uncertainty, with not knowing. The beauty of the world ministers to me. But many other people are less fortunate, and the welfare of others should be my concern. Let's say, how can I keep from singing? It's number 108. Dear people, I have once again made a I prepared Kay Frazier and Rolita to present to you the window pane, the words are in your service.
Thank you.
past the basket from Prairie.
Give your pledge or donation to our society. We run a volunteer effort and money. Have a chance for announcements now. Yes, Mitchie.
I have some bunches of what's called blueberry or money plant or silver dollar, which you peel little things off and they're the seed you put in your garden, and these lovely silver discs hang on it. If you want to put proceeds to Prairie donation time, there are also bunches of Lily Valley that need home. You don't have to pay for those because I haven't been watered for a couple of weeks. That would be adding up something.
Eileen?
Along the same vein, there are spaghetti squash out there.
Really nice looking ones. Mike is going to tell us something about next week.
Right, there is an error regarding the title in the Prairie Fire for next week's program. The Web of Life is really the name of the series, and the program for next week is, the title is The Ecological Theater and the Evolutionary Play. Next week is going to be the most diverse, or you can say loose focus, of the six programs. It's going to be an overview, but tied together with the theme, the ecological theater and the evolutionary play. At first, talking about that and other metaphors, another error was this suggest the implication that I would be doing all the discussion. It'll never happen anyway. But the intent was for I would mention a few metaphors that come to mind quickly, and other people also other metaphors, but not more broadly ways of thinking about our environment, the ecosystem, the universe, and that help you to think about it or make it more real. And then part in the middle that's the to me the awesomeness of change. Of the world, of the earth, and how the earth changes, and how the ecological theater is changing all the time, so the play can't possibly stay the same, even if people weren't changing it. And then finally, the last part is some events going on in the current act, the dominance of Homo sapiens, and seeing the late 20th century, some things that are happening now that that have been. Showing up in the news over the last months between the time that I knew I was going to be doing this and next Sunday, and all, again with contributions from the rest of you as well, and Alice and me.
Warren,
Nolita and I will be organizing the circle dinners this year, and we want to get them going earlier than in the past. These are small groups of people who gather in the homes of one of the members once a month about having dinner. And it's a good way of getting to know people better than you can on a Sunday morning. In my own experience, I started attending circle dinners before Sunday services, and that got me hooked into the society.
I might mention that there were other positions available for work at Prairie that Bill Lee and Warren grabbed off the easiest one. But that's what you get for acting fast. So. We need help in other areas, and we sure appreciate your help. So,
no, we'll start it next week.
I'll continue, Mary.
I have to respond to Barbara's talk this morning. I'm trying to learn that whole poem by Helen Hunt Jackson called September, and I know a couple of verses because my father always said these verses when this time of year came around. But I'm just trying to learn that one that you talked about. It's the gentian's bluest fringes are curling in the sun, and dusty trials the milkweed, its milky silk has spun. So I
memorized
that. I just wanted to say today is a very hard deadline, and I found that after, I guess it's been 6 months I've been doing it, it's time for me to move on, but it's been quite a learning experience.
Encourage you to change your mind.
Yes, your social action committee isn't kidding around. You received a preview article in the last Prairie Fire announcing the distribution of our social action survey. So that was just to get you geared up. Be looking for it. It'll be arriving on your doorstep in the next Prairie Fire issue. And give us your time and your vision. And I think we can go a long way with this concept.
Antonina?
Just to explain the ripple effect that happened here this morning, last spring, fall, anyhow, last year's one, the last year's program committee suggested to the committee on committees some topics, and we took it and ran with it. And I want to thank Barb today for really wonderful, wonderful send-off. So as many people went into the creation of what happened today, and thank you to the two committees, and special thanks to Barb. Another ripple in progress. There are three of us here in Madison who studied years ago with Danish leader, singer by the name of Axel Schütz, who was a patriot in Denmark during the Second World War. We are putting on a program in remembrance of him, and the ripple effect is that now we also have someone who was in Denmark at the time who will be giving a bit of a talk, and there also is a visiting musicologist from Denmark who's going to be helping us out. And then we have two accompanists who are fine pianists who are joining. So it's going to be at Edgewood College on the 28th of October at 7 o'clock. And it will be what I think is going to be a very wonderful remembrance of a very, very fine man named Axel Schütz, a Danish tenor.
Looking for a
fire? Good idea. Yes.
Yes, Pat.
Expressed interest in the tour to the Chicago Art Institute to see the Monet exhibit next Saturday, and that trip was filled up so rapidly that we've accumulated a big waiting list. However, and we finally were able to arrange for a second tour on Saturday, November 4th. A number of the people on the waiting list whom we've contacted, we wanted to be completely fair about it, have not responded by the deadline we indicated. So I think we can say if any of you are interested, let me know, and I will put you on the waiting list, and the chances are fairly good that there will be room for some of you outside the visitors' table after the service, if you're interested.
I'm going to warn our guests and visitors that we ask them to introduce themselves and how they got to prayer, so we'll do that in a moment, Barb, and then I've got a couple announcements myself.
Okay, the choir started rehearsal this morning, and I want we rehearse at 9 o'clock in the morning before on Sunday morning, and I want to invite anybody who has not sung in the choir before to feel free to join us. No previous singing experience is necessary. And those who've sung with us before, we hope everyone will come back. We have a good turnout this morning.
The Deerfield Unitarian Congregation, Northfield Church, has an annual event called PhilosoFest. It's October 14th. If you're interested, there are brochures in the back. The James Reeves Society has asked us to announce that they have a Christian Explorer group, and you'll find these yellow in the brochure rack back there, which will be start pretty soon. I don't want to try to do that. The Prairie has made a contract with the Family Services Incorporated to conduct a Families and Schools Together program in our building. That's FAST. If you may be familiar with that. I'm bringing it to your attention particularly because they will be occupying our building Wednesday late afternoons and early Monday afternoons and let me do this over again. It's Mondays. Don't schedule anything for Monday evenings from 3 to 8, from mid-October until mid-December. Any other announcements? Oh, and now we'll have our introduction of guests and visitors. So if you're new here, or maybe returning and don't think people know your face, we'd like to hear from you.
I'm Karen Morris. This is my husband, Rich. And we've been here before. We moved up here about a year ago from Indiana.
Well, welcome.
Mia Kim, will you stand up, Mia? I met her at First Unitarian last Sunday, and she's here from Korea. She's teaching on Saturday mornings Korean as a second language, but she's also a student on Monday and Tuesday at university in early childhood education.
Okay, with that, I think that concludes our program, except for closing words. Stay for coffee.
Let's stand for our closing words and then stay for coffee and visiting. There is your program at the bottom. You can leave out the word thy if that suits your philosophy better.
May the way we live each day reflect our joy and our gratitude for thy many blessings.
Thank you.